Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly, coming direct to you from Guardian Towers. I'm Alex Krotowski, and I'm back after a month of heavy grafting in the USA, so please do excuse my accent. I've been nosing around the tech stores on those shores, watching as the shiny bits and bobs have increased in value as my British pound has gone down. And so I return with nothing new, just dreams of shiny things. You've been well looked after by Paul Carr, Sarah Lacey, and the rest of the gang, and many thanks to everyone for stepping up to the mic while I was away. In the pod this week, our esteemed regulars, Charles Arthur, and our man in the field, Bobby Johnson. Welcome to you both. How was your November?
Mine was pretty good. I closed it out by sticking a great big rod up a very big drain and clearing it of a huge root that had filled in there. So that was my basic technology experience.
I'm glad you said root. Drain, root. We'll stick with that. Bobby, how was yours? You experienced your very first American Thanksgiving.
I did, yeah, and stuffed myself until my eyes popped out of my head. And spent about 6 days basically eating Thanksgiving food. And so that's good. And of course, you know, Christmas is just around the corner, so I can do it all over again.
Hurrah! Ho, ho, ho.
And they wonder why America has a weight problem.
Everybody rub your belly. Well, on this week's show, we've got a corker. Twitter founder Biz Stone dishes the dirt on their relationship with Facebook, while paid content's Rafat Ali gives us his insider's view on the outlook for digital startups in this economic downturn. We're hitting the ground running, so hold on to your headphones. Let's get started on the fourth to last Tech Weekly for 2008. What in the world is going to happen to the startup scene now that the good times are going down the internet tubes? Last Friday, Charles and Jemima spoke with Rafat Ali, multi-bubble digital media expert and founder, publisher, and editor of Paid Content. It's the hub of digital media business news, and it was also recently acquired by The Guardian. So we asked Rafat for his tuppence on the future for startups, Twitter's business model, and all about Yahoo. Charles began by asking him about the dilemma of the outlook of the search engine. First up, what is Yahoo for?
Well, I think that's the biggest challenge for them. I think them as a board have to decide literally even before they find a CEO. What are they? Are they a Silicon Valley tech company, or are they a display advertising machine, which essentially is the biggest online brand advertising machine? And if they're that, then they have to find a person who just drives that, because they have some very strong media properties, Yahoo News, Yahoo Sports.
What's your instinct? What are you hearing from people out there?
I think they're going to do the safe choice and get somebody from Silicon Valley. But the right choice, according to me, should be a media, entertainment media person.
So if they went to media and entertainment, what would happen to things like Flickr and to, you know, Yahoo Pipes and the sort of the fun tech?
Isn't it going down the Terry Semel route to have another media person? Because wasn't there a consensus that didn't really work for them?
Semel did work for the first 2 years. There were tons of stories talking about how he has saved Yahoo from the first internet bust and then moved into premium services. And of course, that worked for a while. And then the ad market came back. And if you look at stories from 2005, everybody said Yahoo has found its mojo.
AOL might be in the picture somewhere. Do you think that's got any legs to it? Because it does make sense in terms of competing in the display market.
AOL, again, is closer to what Yahoo probably should be. Their AOL is focusing a lot on their publishing properties through their blogs, which, from what I know, traffic-wise, are doing fabulously well. So, I mean, you would suppose that the areas that they're strong in versus the areas that Yahoo is strong in and combined could be better. But the reality is that if Microsoft buys Yahoo, it'll take at least a year for it to pass through the regulatory issues. And then 6 to 8 months for integration. It's like a year and a half when Google will be all guns trying to do things that they're supposed to do in a downturn, which is focus on the core, while these two players will be trying to figure out what the hell.
But of course, the difference about Yahoo is that it is to some extent a content producer, whereas Google is very careful to say, we don't produce content, we just find content out there and take you to it.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to be changing. Yahoo doesn't seem to be giving up its content producing desires. And in what you've described, it sounds like a Yahoo AOL tie-up actually could make more sense than trying to chase after the horse that's long since bolted and has, in fact, moved to the next town and had followers.
Yeah, I mean, I think the search battle is lost unless there's some breakthrough revolutionary technology leap that happens in search, which I don't know if it'll come through Yahoo.
That's Yahoo done and dusted then.
We thought it'd be interesting to talk about startups as well. What does this, the kind of doom and gloom of 2009 and budget cuts and, you know, VCs pulling out, what does this mean for startups? I mean, is it could be a good thing that we see the dead wood stripped out and we'd be left with really solid business models.
Companies that come out at the other end, yeah. Mm. I mean, I think the good part is it's going to get increasingly cheaper to start a company. That's always the good part. And you are forced to do a lot more with a lot less. Always a good thing, and which means that there's discipline and creative ways to get audiences and money. So those are some of the positive parts. But the harder part is, if you're a first-time entrepreneur, it's going to be really tough. If you're a serial entrepreneur, if you have a track record, you may be giving up more of your company because the valuation is going to be tempered. But at least there's a track record, and you will get money. I mean, there's money from VCs who have their funds who have to invest. But it'll just be at a very different valuation. And they will be, I think, closely scrutinizing your business model as opposed to, say, even 6 to 8 months ago or a year ago where it was still about let's grab audiences now and let's figure out the business model later.
Do you think we're going to see far less of businesses focused on advertising because, you know, advertising's drying up, more businesses reliant on subscriptions and much more solid revenues?
Well, I mean, I think advertising will, for all intents and purposes, will be the biggest revenue stream for all of these companies. Subscription or premium services will be a part of it, but it will never become the predominant business model in most consumer-facing internet businesses. I mean, anytime you start charging for something which is novel, along comes somebody who undercuts it and gives it to you for free, two people out of a garage, which is free and cheap. And for them, it's just a labor of love. They're not really looking to make money out of it. So because of that, subscription for any kind of consumer service will be really tough.
Is there a model then for Twitter? I mean, you know, the question people keep on asking is, how can Twitter make money? Can you see a path to money for it?
Can I say no? I'm not going to be happy about it. Twitter will become a generic utility thing. It's like blogging software. Who's making money out of blogging software? Because of the nature of how generic SMS is, these will be layers on top of, say, the operators that are already there. Twitter as a unique entity will not exist except for its value as an audience distribution stuff.
What do you make of their strategy of trying to make money by getting brands to pay a premium for being on the service and reaching those people that are, you know, obviously really engaged? And
through Twitter?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a brand that I would love to get text from in the middle of the night.
Whole Foods is doing really well on there.
Ryanair has a thing on it.
Well, services, yes, because utilities that you have to go online to check, or ticket prices for that, or stock prices, if that becomes through Twitter, then yeah, I think in that sense. But again, those are generic services that don't really have to use Twitter for it.
Mm. You touched briefly on some of the opportunities that are going to come out of this. It'll be good for really strong small businesses that are going to stand out now. What's the rest of the silver lining in this 2009 cloud then?
There's a lot of people out there to hire for cheap. I'm talking from a bigger media or internet companies. Is that besides laying off people, which is not a good thing, I'm just saying, besides doing that, they will be hard pressed to look at their portfolios of products. And till now, media companies and internet companies have typically avoided to close some major products, but next year actually see it happen. And it's a good thing because then they rationalize their portfolio, come out a lot leaner, meaner, and it's true for companies like Yahoo, Microsoft, even Google.
That was Rafa Ali talking with Charles and Jemima. Now, we're going to steer clear of the Twitter discussion, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But Bobby, since they recorded that interview, there have been a lot of rumors flying about the Microsoft Yahoo situation. What's the latest that's going on from over there?
A lot of it span off the Sunday Times ran a number saying that Microsoft was in this kind of complex series of negotiations about buying some bits of Yahoo, which could eventually lead to them taking over the whole company for $20 billion. Now, that's been fairly rubbished from other quarters. It's pretty clear that Microsoft has always wanted to do a deal for the search part of Yahoo. A source was telling me just a little while ago about how Flickr was kind of up for grabs as well. and Microsoft might be interested in that, and Yahoo were pitching it as one of the things they wanted to sell off. So I think there's definitely a deal to be done at some point.
One wonders if they're sort of trying a different rumour each week just to see which one gooses the share price best. But, I mean, weirdly, Flickr, you could sort of see selling adverts against Flickr stuff, you know, all the Mumbai photos that appeared, that you'd get a, you know, you could get a fantastic lot of advertising off that.
Rafa also brought up this notion of the decline of advertising revenue. And, you know, if Bobby says that that should be the focus, it may not be the focus ultimately. And do you know of any interesting alternatives that are out there to how people may make money in this culture?
Beyond straight subscriptions, there's still not a lot happening because the tie-in between, say, text messaging, which is a sort of way of doing micropayments, and the web isn't quite strong enough yet. And when people are using phones as internet devices, they tend to be using the internet. So you haven't quite got the, you know, it's not tied in that way, in the way that it can be with a text message. So it's still not happening. But I think, give it the next 12 months, I think people are going to be starting to get desperate enough to really come up with something new.
I think that if we start looking out towards the East as well, where they are very much integrating micropayments, for example, with their mobile phone technology, how that may then translate over here could be interesting in the next 12 months. But we'll have the latest on the takeover, if indeed there is one, and more on the economic impact on the tech scene on guardian.co.uk/technology. Meanwhile, here's Jemima with even more of what you can find there.
A court in LA has sentenced a 49-year-old to 1 year in prison and a $100,000 fine for bullying a teenager on MySpace. America's first cyberbullying case was brought after Laurie Drew used the fictional character of a teenage boy to taunt 13-year-old Megan Meyer. She later committed suicide. Controversial ad targeting company Form lost its chairman, chief executive and two other directors this week after a boardroom brawl over the future of the firm. Former Tory Chancellor Norman Lamont has stepped into one of the board roles. Nokia unveiled the N97 this week, a touchscreen multimedia phone that it hopes will compete with Apple's iPhone and Google's G1. An initial review by Robert Scoble said the N97 is far better spec'd than the iPhone, with better battery life, camera and a video function, but it won't be on sale until spring 2009. And Apple came to Springfield this week in the form of a 6-minute Simpsons special. "You think you're cool because you buy a $500 phone with a picture of a fruit on it," says Bart, dubbing a Steve Mobbs video at the Mapple store. "Well, guess what? They cost $8 to make and I pee on every one."
That was Jemima with the news. Charles, looking at the MySpace story, is this the death of anonymity?
I don't think it's quite the death of anonymity. I think there'll still be places where you can, for example, just upload files, which will destroy all sort of trace of where you're uploaded from. So sites like WikiLeaks, for example, will still try to basically protect your anonymity. But I think the pseudonymity, where you pretend to be someone or you hide behind an identity, especially when it starts to intersect with something where the forces of the law get interested, I think that becomes much harder to protect now. And I think actually that this is something of a death knell for that sort of pseudonymity, where it goes to the edge, where it basically leads to a breaking of the law.
Bobby, how do you think, though, that the online communities regulate themselves? Do you not think that this pseudonymity may be something that corrects itself?
I do think that the anonymity aspect of this is fairly overplayed. What I think is really interesting about this case, and let's not forget, Laurie Drew was only found guilty of some misdemeanors, not of the biggest charges that she was facing. But what's interesting here is also a jurisdictional thing. So this case happened in Missouri, but it was prosecuted by the US federal prosecutors in California because MySpace is based in California. So you've got this aspect where they're now, you know, trying any route to prosecute somebody, but they're also expanding the laws around hacking. But the idea that you can slightly come sideways at some of the hacking laws and try and broaden them out into more of a social context, really, than they have been before. Now, I think those are interesting things, and we might see over time, you know, we need more precedent-setting cases, really, to sort this out one way or the other.
Well, what do you think are the implications then for this, if it's not precedent-setting?
Well, I mean, imagine how it might might start to play in with UK libel law as well. We've seen some libel cases here already where people have taken action against people who have said anonymous things on message boards about them. If you start being able to use hacking laws to cover that, you know, this becomes not a crime of libel, but, you know, you can prosecute someone for a misuse of a computer, then suddenly you're really expanding it, and sometimes in dangerous ways. I mean, you know, libel law is...
But then again, you know, hacking law is a criminal one, whereas libel is civil. I mean, you know, an individual can't start a hacking prosecution. They have to get the CPS interested in it.
And obviously we're talking about, you know, two different countries with two different legal systems here. But one of the things about the Laurie Drew case was that effectively they were using whatever method they could find to try and prosecute a woman for what they thought to be a kind of grievous abuse of power. And so
to be honest, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it was someone who was basically trying to, you know, drive their next door neighbour away in a very, very unfair, unkind
way. Yeah, with horrible, tragic consequences, you know. But I suppose the overall thing is, you know, does that filter through? Do people stop doing this because they've seen this case? And, you know, I think we're a long way from this changing any social behaviour. But maybe in the long term, you know, people might start to think twice.
It might be in the back of the mind.
Well, and on a lighter note, if we could just quickly move over to The Simpsons. Charles, this was you've been talking about this in the office all day.
I've been blogging it, basically.
I haven't seen it. I was on a plane. So can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Well, I can only tell you about the 9 minutes or so that I've seen, which has appeared on YouTube. The Simpsons had an episode in the States on Sunday night in which they beautifully skewered Apple in the name of Mapple. Intriguingly, they didn't use the company's own name, and it was led by a guy called Steve Mobbs. All sorts of things occur. There's this beautiful, big, airy store, and Lisa goes in and says, "It's so sterile." And she gets a delivery from Apple, and she's delighted at it. And she says, "Oh, the packaging
is so wonderful.
Sorry, Mapple. And she says, "Oh, the packaging is so wonderful. They think like me." And she opens it up and says, "It's my first bill, and it's $1,200. She says, "But how could I have that?" "Oh, it must be the 1,212 songs I downloaded."
Ah, there you go. See, well, libel works cross-platforms, doesn't it?
But we're disappointed that they didn't get Steve Jobs to actually voice it. I mean, usually, you know, they can persuade people to come on the show, but clearly he didn't want to sort of have any of the shine taken off the real company.
It struck a chord, I suppose, didn't it?
Mm.
Well, thank you very much to Jemima for bringing us all this fabulous news, and you can read all about it on guardian.co.uk/technology. Keep smoking our news crack pipe by subscribing to the feed. Information is available on the website. So last week's rumor bombshell was that Twitter, the life microblogging application, was about to jump under the covers with Facebook. There were secret talks, raised eyebrows, and more than a few knowing winks. After all, Facebook's model seems to be working, and as we've heard from Rafat before, Twitter's prospects for money-making are debatable. Thankfully, Biz Stone, founder of Twitter, was in the UK for Silicon Valley Comes to Oxford, so Jemima was able to head up there to get the skinny direct from the horse's mouth. She started out kindly, asking for examples of brands he believes have done particularly well using the service.
The classic example, sort of the first brand that we saw really shining on Twitter, was Comcast. And that's the example of the popular blogger who said, my cable is out, I'm going to write a post tomorrow that absolutely slams Comcast, and the number one Google search is going to be my result. I hate Comcast. I can't stand him. Within a minute, he had an at reply on Twitter. "Hey, this is Comcast. What seems to be the problem? Maybe we should send a van out to your house." And within an hour, he had his cable fixed. So, of course, the next day, the blog post was Comcast has unbelievable customer service. So it really turned it around. So that was this beautiful example that I like to use. But other companies that are doing really, really good stuff with Twitter, I think, are JetBlue, the airline JetBlue, which regularly interacts with its customers, and I fly it often, so it's kind of fun to have that interaction. They mix fun, quirky, sort of friendly interaction together with marketing. Well, they'll slip in, "Hey, by the way, we have new routes. You might want to check them out." Or they'll slip in useful information like East Coast is delayed due to rain. So, but just by following them, especially if you fly a lot, you get a sense of sort of what's going on there, in addition to that friendly type of stuff that they do.
And how might this make money for Twitter as well? Because this is the eternal question.
Yeah, well, I think that's something that we want to try to start focusing on next is if these big brands like Dell and JetBlue and Comcast and Whole Foods are all on Twitter and they're getting a lot of value out of it and they've got a lot of followers and we're sending out a lot of messages on their behalf and we're really providing them a good service that they get value out of and that consumers are getting value out of, then it makes sense for us to think about entering into a relationship with them where we can offer more value at a price. So I think once we start doing that, we'll discover together what the best way to approach it is. But we really want to take kind of an iterative approach. We don't have like a, we don't want to unveil this sort of secret weapon. It's going to be the same way we've kind of approached everything else, which is let's put it out there. Let's see how people are using it and recognize some patterns and then kind of bolster the better ones and enhance them and make them even more valuable.
Is that right that you have about 6 million users now each month?
Well, we actually don't share the total number of registered users, so that's just numbers just float around.
Okay, and a very important issue for people in the UK is that the full capacity of our SMS ability got taken away. Any chance this might be reinstated?
I hope so. I mean, it's not going to be something we can just flip a switch on. Unfortunately, I wish it was. It's going to be something that requires some serious deliberation, some serious business development work. Thankfully, we're poised to be able to aggressively hire for these positions. We're currently hiring for 10 new positions. Many of them are business development positions. And hopefully, it'll be these new people that really get in there on the front lines of mobile and negotiate so we can get this sort of the true spirit of Twitter working again. It's something I'm really looking forward to.
So it's more likely to be an app from an external company than something you might develop in-house?
No, I mean, it's something that we would, ideally we would develop this in-house. We would get the negotiations and the arrangements in place so that we can provide, exactly what we hoped and seek to provide in the first place. So,
and I have to ask about Facebook as well. Apparently talks ended about 3 weeks ago, Facebook buying Twitter, which I think probably a lot of Twitterers would be rather concerned about because it seems like there's a lot of directions Twitter could go in, and Facebook, as you described with status updates, does something quite specific.
Yeah, there are some interesting overlaps. I think, most of them are complementary between Twitter and Facebook. Twitter's goal has always been to create a sustainable company around this concept of this kind of unique new form of communication that we've innovated. So, that's our plan, and that's what we're working towards.
That was Biz Stone from Twitter talking with Jemima. Bobby, I'm kind of, I'm a Twitterer, right? I'm admitting this. But when I was speaking with other people in the States, where Twitter seems to be big and it's still free to make SMS messages, most people just sort of stared blankly at me as if I was talking either from another planet or, why would I actually want to share that much information? It's boring. It's information overload. Now, if they actually want to make money, surely they have to, they have to get all these people on board. So, what is it? Why should normal people bother using Twitter?
This is, this is a really interesting question because I think we see, there's a piece in the Evening Standard this week in which somebody said precisely this, hello, I tried using Twitter. What the hell is it about? I don't get it. I mean, you're not going to sell
it,
this.
Let's point out, he gave it precisely 2 hours.
Yeah, of watching the public feed.
And I think one person.
Jemima alluded to the ways that Twitter could go. What do you think are the ways that Twitter could go that do make it more accessible, that could potentially bring in some cash?
I thought about this question a few months ago, and it seemed to me that the way for Twitter to make money would be to charge for access to its API. So, if you want to use it on the web, that's free. But if you want to get it through some other sort of API, like through one of the many free clients that there are at the moment, or through a mobile phone, you pay a subscription. And that would bring in a lot of money pretty fast. Alternatives would be, for example, charging companies that want to be on the site. So, Ryanair has one where it just posts something about what its latest flight prices are. Twitter might say, okay, if you want to be on there, Ryanair, you got to pay us money. There are loads of ways to do it, but I just don't quite see what he's saying in the sort of, hey, it doesn't matter how much we lose on each transaction, because look, we'll make it up in volume. It's that sort of, crazy logic that basically got us into the mess we're in.
They've just hired Rael Dornfest, who used to be the CTO at O'Reilly and was running a really interesting company in Portland called Values of N. Now, he's a really clever guy and could come up with some really clever stuff for them. and maybe come up with the next generation of Twitter.
Well, more coverage of the Silicon Valley comes to Oxford event is at guardian.co.uk/media/PDA. And you can follow us on Twitter. Yes, indeed. You can check us out at twitter.com/GuardianTW. And speaking of blogs, here's what you've been saying on the channel over the past week. Bobby, what's been going on?
I had the last week off, so I wasn't blogging myself, but I did catch up with what else was going on. I enjoyed a thread where Jack was saying that he wasn't too convinced by the Oxford word of the year, which was hypermiling, which is apparently when you try and eke out some fuel efficiency in your car.
That's rubbish.
Yeah, it's terrible. So, you know,
word of the year nobody uses.
Yeah, I've never heard this word. Exactly. That's ridiculous.
No,
me
neither.
They're trying to be of the zeitgeist, aren't they?
So, but people were coming up with words they thought should be in there or whatever. And Dr. Bendy Spoogun, who I believe works at a hospital near you, his or her word was bloggerism, which is the procedure in which a blogger will always eventually talk about themselves and thus enable a self-absorbed society.
Well, that's
that was my word of the week.
I still think Dr. Bendy Spooner blah blah is the better word for that. Well, over on the games blog, Keith, the father of two, has been writing about games for the very young. I think he's been doing a lot of self-observation himself. And he was playing, or rather his son Zach, three-year-old son Zach, was playing Peppa Pig, CBeebies, and Channel 5's Milkshake. And he also played one called I Did It, Mum, 2. I like the fact that there's a number 2. That has nothing to do with it. Anyway, we'll move on from Charles, your pipes and the roots. Anyway, top score, 1632. It was a very active post, actually. It seems that there's a lot of people who read the games blog have very young kids. And top score 1632 says, my 4-year-old daughter had I Did It, Mum 1 last year and loves it. The games are very simple, but the facility to be able to record your own voice, giving encouraging comments, is great, which is nice, multimedia. The only real criticism is the heavily Japanese-centric feel. I had a bit of a hard time explaining what sushi was in the Build Your Own Lunchbox game, also that the lady was wearing a kimono, not a dressing gown. So, you know, multiculturalism from a young age there. And Charles, what was going on in your technology world?
Well, I was enjoying a blog post by Jack who found that there's the State Stats site, that's hard to say 3 times in a row, which looks for correlations between Google search terms and the US state characteristics. And it was headlined, why is there a correlation between searching for PlayStation and obesity? And once people got playing with Google Trends and State Stats, it just turned out some fantastic things. My two most favorite ones were Ultrasound, who did a search on iPod and found that it was negatively correlated with suicide at -0.43, where -1 is anti-correlation and 1 is dead-on correlation. And if you search on Zune, then you found it was suicide 0.42, positive, moderate. Sort of sounds like the shipping forecast, doesn't it?
It does.
That's what I was just about to say. I can imagine you say Zune, suicide, positive.
Microsoft Office, obesity, 0.43, positive, moderate.
Thank you, Charles, for that. We'll be getting you a job at the BBC in no time. You can find out.
It's a one of its rubbish.
Find out all about it. And get in on the conversations over at guardian.co.uk/blogs/digitalcontent/technology/games. Now, over on our Facebook page, we've had a request from Mark Kobayashi Hillary, who asked, what is the website of the guy who has the music site that checks your iTunes library and advises on local gigs? Well, the answer is songkick.com. And Mark Ulis, I believe that's how you pronounce his surname, U-L-E-S, he wrote, does anyone else listen? I love this. Does anyone else listen to the podcast at more than 100% speed? I listen at 150%. I've tried various speeds, and 150% is the fastest I can really follow the
meaning.
Well,
like picking and perking.
He saves time by speeding the program up, and he says, now I've kicked the real-time habit. I have more time to listen to more podcasts and learn more, and it doesn't even require any effort. All right. So we've got some downsizing of upsizing and all that kind of
stuff. Perhaps we should, if we all drink a vat of coffee before next week's show, we can just speed it up anyway.
You know, I think helium, possibly.
We all just start saying really, really fast.
Well, I've got a tongue twister. I'm going to say, so ready for this, Mark. It says, whether the weather be cold or whether the weather be hot, we'll be together, whatever the weather, whether we like it or not.
Oh, yeah!
Kerching! Oh, all those years in school of thinking of tongue twisters. Anyway, you can find out the plethora of ways you can keep up with the team at guardian.co.uk/audio/techweekly. I actually want to speak really slowly now.
Mark, just to play with something wrong with your iPod.
This week, we want your thoughts on the tech talking points of the year, the product launches, the takeovers, the innovations, and of course, the explosions. Send, tweet, or blog your top five tech talking points of the year and the five things you're looking forward to or expecting in 2009, and we'll feature some of them over the next few programs.
In this Thursday's Guardian Tech section, millions of Sky Plus users found they couldn't make backups of their recordings during October. The on-screen message said it was a copy protection measure. Sky says it was an error. But in the States, the same measures have been used against people recording shows. We find out whether it was an error or intentional. The latest data suggests people keep buying games in a recession. But is the PlayStation 3 more vulnerable because it's more expensive than other consoles? A waste product from biofuels can be converted into hydrogen using a simple process. Does glycerol offer the hope of a carbon-neutral power for our cars? And could lawyers be the next group to get their work crowdsourced? All this and more in Thursday's tech section with The Guardian.
That's it from us this week. Thanks very much to our special guests, Rafat from Paid Content and Biz from Twitter. Many thanks to our pod team, Charles, Bobby and Jemima, who gave us the news. And I'd like to give a very special shout out to my mother. I was staying with her this month and she says that she listens every week, but she doesn't understand most of what we say. So hello, Mum. Anyway, see the rest of you next Tuesday.